You take the ones that are made for garbage detail. You take the others who are made to think but who can't act. You take... I swallowed a bug.
I was thinking about this the other day. I mean, you ever have, I'm sure everyone has, but you have random thoughts of times in your life where just something really embarrassing or douchey happens. Like, I know Bill Burr talks about it in his podcast that he gets him in the shower and he'll think about some old show that went terrible. And he'll get so wrapped up in the memory and be like, oh God, and he'll like yell in his fucking shower. And his wife will be like, what the fuck's going on? And he'll have to like explain, whatever. I don't know. Two of these popped in my head, I think, right when I was falling asleep. That's a good time to get them, right when you're falling asleep at night. As opposed to falling asleep in the daytime. Why did I add that fucking detail? Fuck! I already fucked it up. I'm 1 minute in. So I this time I was working on a little movie called Mission Impossible 3. it was my first movie. Oh, you know what? Maybe I'll come back to this later in the episode. I have another point to touch on here. But I didn't know what I was doing. I'm fucking barely over a year in L.A. Super, obviously, if you know me, major film fucking nerd. Just losing my mind on the set of this movie. And as we're filming, more and more casting stuff is coming in. All the parts weren't cast yet. And I see on the call sheet, what was his name in the movie? Oh, shit. It was, what was his character's name? I don't know. Whatever. Bad guy, Philip Seymour Hoffman. I'm like, oh my God, fucking Philip Seymour. The first thought I had was, oh my God, like Magnolia is like my third favorite movie of all time, and it's not only is Phil Seymour Hoffman going to be in this, but it's fucking Frank Mackey and Phil Parma are going to be back together, and they have all those scenes together, and every fucking day they were together. I'm just like, it's fucking Frank Mackey and Phil Parma. It just made me so goddamn happy. I'm not kidding. I swear on my mother's life I even said that. I mentioned it to Tom Cruise once. I'm like, you know, you guys haven't worked together since Magnolia. That was awesome that I got to do that. Anyways, first day, Phil Seymour Hoffman's there. He was sitting around by himself or something like that. And I'm like, I'm just like, holy shit. You know, like, how can this fucking movie just keeps getting more and more awesome. And I think he was by himself, and I walk up to him like, this is so fucking, oh, this is so fucking douchey. I'm like, I didn't know, you know, I'm new to all this shit at the time. I'm like, hey man, you from Rochester, huh? He's like, yeah, from Fairport, yeah. I'm like, oh, cool, yeah, man, I'm from Buffalo. And I don't know why, because if you don't know, they're barely an hour apart from each other. I thought that in my imagination, Phil was just going to get up and just slowly open his arms like I was a fucking child that he had abandoned years ago and just embrace me and be like, my brother and shit, you know? He's like, oh, yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, Bill's got their ass kicked the other day, huh? And I was like, yeah. He's like, yeah. And then he just stared ahead, and I was like, okay. And I just kind of like sidestepped away, and I was like, why did I do that? Why the fuck did I just do that? It was so fucking embarrassing. I don't know. I thought it was going to be this magic moment. I thought we were going to be like instant buddies. And I just fucking flash forward that night. Just me and PSH just fucking slamming down beers at a bar somewhere. Nope. He just sort of politely dismissed me. Which he absolutely should have. And then later on, I mean, that was like his first fucking day there. And it was kind of early in the shoot. And he wasn't a terribly friendly... I know I've talked about this. He wasn't a terribly friendly... or forthcoming fella. So the more that sunk in, I was like, oh boy, he doesn't want to be bothered at all. And I bothered him badly. But, in fact, it took me the whole rest of that fucking movie to get a picture. I'll put it on my Flickr, Live from the 405 podcast on Flickr, FLICKR. I'll put a picture of old me and old Philly. I look terrible in it, but, it took me the whole movie to get a picture because he was just not, he wasn't a fucking friendly guy at all. And no one could figure, Declan, was that his name, Declan, in the movie? Nobody could figure out if he was just a cunt or if he was methody and it was in character, you know what I mean? Maybe he wasn't because I know we used to. I hope I haven't talked about it. I can't remember. I don't know if I talked about it on the show, but even when they did have a, because fucking Tom Cruise is like such a fucking like fun loving dude. He's so friendly, and they'd have this big like kind of fucking fight scene, and then they'd cut, and Tom'd be like, "You all right? That was great." And he would help him up and like pat Phil Seymour Hoffman on the back, and Phil would just look all pissed off. I'm like, is he like fucking? He did not like doing the stunts and the physical scenes, and he was in terrible fucking shape. He smoked like a fucking pack a day, and they'd be doing these fight scenes where, like, I mean, obviously they bring in a stunt double for the real stuff where he's getting thrown to the ground and shit, but when they were just kind of like locking up and like tussling, he had this fucking wheeze that was so loud and like disturbing, like the whole, we'd be rolling, we all kind of be looking at each other like, is this fucking guy all right? He sounded terrible. But then they filmed a bunch of his scenes, and then he left to go film something else. We filmed a bunch of scenes without him for like, I don't know, a fucking couple weeks. And then one day he showed up when he wasn't, just to say, I don't know, just to hang. He came to Paramount when we were on the stage. And he came in his jammies. And this fucking guy was stoned out of his fucking mind. His eyeballs were so red. And he was all happy. He was all in a good mood. I never saw him like this before or after. He was just so obviously fucking baked. Like, hey, guys, and he's like hugging everybody. I was like, whoa, Phil's fucking ripped. And I was somewhere stuck next to him. And I had seriously just, honest to God, seen Capote the night before. And I was like, oh, dude, I saw Capote last night. It was fucking great work, man. And he was like, thanks, man, yeah. So that was douche memory number one. I think I got Phil more Seymour Hoffman stories, but whatever. I'm not going to fucking... You know, I asked him how... The only thing I really wanted to talk to him. Oh yeah, the day I actually did get the picture with him, and he was in a really that's what I was gonna say. He was in a really good mood one day ever. He loved the stunt guys for some reason. He loved those stunt guys. He was real cool around them, so it was a real stunt heavy day. And all those dudes were outside. Everyone loves the fucking stunt guys. They get all the chicks, and everyone was hanging out outside the stage. And I've been waiting for this. I've been like, and I think it was like a second or it was one of his last days of shooting. So I'm like, I gotta get it today or at least try. What's he gonna do? Tell me to fucking die? You know. And then it turned out he was totally cool. He's like, yeah, yeah, sure. And I got a picture. But I asked him, I'm like, I didn't, you know, obviously there's a billion. I always say this, like you meet these guys and it's like so many things come to your fucking head at once that you want to ask them from a lifetime of watching their shit. And then you usually can't pick a one. It just jams up the thought tube and you can't think of anything. Especially if it's a time when you run into somebody famous and it's like you had no idea they were going to be there. You're like, holy shit, look at that. And it's just, you know, whatever. Maybe this is just me. It's all I got, all right? I don't like sports. I don't like nothing else. But I was like, how in the fuck did you guys, when you filmed that Mattress Man commercial outtake on the Punch Drunk Love DVD, they made this Mattress Man commercial. And he's like, I don't know if you ever saw the movie, but this thing never made it into the movie, but I was so fascinated by it. He's like, come on onto my store. Mattress is half off. And he's playing this guitar, and then he like jumps off this little roof and he lands on this pile of mattresses that are on top of like a fucking band's tour bus, and then he bounces off and him and all the mattresses fall to the fucking ground. It's like, I think it's all in one take and one big wide shot. I think you see him hit the ground and everything. So I don't know how, I gotta see it again. I could be wrong. Maybe it's he might fall out of frame. Maybe there was a safety. I don't know. I honestly haven't seen it in years, so I can't remember. But I was like, how did you get that fucking shot? How the hell did you guys do that? He's like, Paul's a very clever editor. He's like, he knows how to set up a shot that could fool you. He's like, that's all I could say. I don't want to ruin it for you. And then he died. So I never got the answer. But the other neighbor on Douche Street was when I was doing Red Belt, this much maligned David Mamet movie. I don't know. It's not... It's got its moments. I think I liked it, obviously, because I was there and I worked on it, so it's cool to me, but it's not a particularly great movie. But it's got Chiwetel Ejiofor from freaking 12 Years a Slave, who was known as Chewy around the set. And at that time, all he'd done was Serenity. He was the bad guy in Serenity, which I just fucking loved that movie. And I think I asked him about it like three times. Yeah, I asked him three times. He was super nice. Chiwetel Ejiofor is fucking super nice guy. But, the fucking cinematographer is Robert, speaking of Magnolia, fucking Robert Elswit, my favorite DP on earth. And I'm working on the fucking camera crew with Robert Elswit, with David Mamet directing. Like, this is a fucking, I can't even tell you what a fucking dream come true. This is ridiculous. Like, these are two of my fucking absolute Heroes. When I was in school, I was a theater minor in college, and I was a film major. I wrote a paper about fucking Elswit for my class, and then for in film, and then I wrote a paper about David Mamet for my theater. I swear to God, I wrote fucking papers on these guys. Now I'm working with them, you know? Ridiculous. And so this whole, oh gosh, it's such a fucking douchey memory. There's this whole, we were shooting in the Long Island, or Long Island, the Long Beach Arena, where they have like soccer games and shit like that, I think. I don't know. It's this big, it looks like a big golf ball. And inside, they have sports and shit. So the scene is like this MMA thing, and there's like a boxing ring. So there's all these fucking, obviously, spectator seats. So there was tons of extras and shit in it. And then one of the, so what they would do to save money is they'd only have the extras sit in the seats. They had a bunch of extras and then a shit ton of these fucking dummies that were just like from the waist up, that were like fucking fill the seats kind of thing. And it was weird. Like if you go to lunch and you'd walk in, there'd be this entire fucking auditorium full of these dummies staring at you. It was fucking creepy. It'd be silent there, you know? And, can I make a right? Hang on. I'm trying to make a right in Venice. I got 3 dead bodies on Venice Boulevard, Justine. I'm sorry if the goddamn chicken got overcooked. Ever in heat? this guy's staring at me. No, he just stared. This guy looks like a fat Louis C.K. and he with clown hair, and he just looked at my ripped up bumper and stared at me talking into a microphone at Venice and Sepulveda in Culver City. So we're in this fucking auditorium. I'm trying to make a right. I'm sorry. There's like 9 million things going on at this intersection. I can't tell if I can fucking go. Okay, now I can go, please. Oh, no, this guy's making a U-turn. Okay. And at one point, I'm sitting in the fucking seats. This is a ball buster of a fucking job, too. It was tough, man. I had to, because the camera truck was parked outside the doors. But, like, when you walk in, the steps go down like a fucking story. Like, you got to walk down these steps into the fucking arena. So, all I did was run film mags from the truck to the fucking set all day. And I had to go up and down these stairs. So, I'm seriously from, like, fucking 6 in the morning until 9 at night, I'm just running shit up and down this. It was fucking ridiculous. Like, I was so exhausted by the end of these days. I still remember that. Like, I'm trying not to be, like, sore and shit. Like, it got to the point where I'm just like, I can't fucking keep doing this. I'm exhausted. I was like, what was I, 26? It was just fucking killing me, but whatever. What was I gonna do, bitch? I'm like, this is a fucking dream gig here. But, I'm sitting in the fucking seats in the auditorium, and, I don't know, we just got done with some scene, and it was a long setup between the next one. I'm sitting there, and fucking David Mamet comes and just sits right in the fucking thing, right in front of me. So it's kind of just me and him in these chairs. And, he's sitting there, and I go, I'm like behind him, and I go, I'm like, hey man, I just want to say it's an honor to be on your set. I'm a huge fan, and this is really cool. I'm the camera PA, but I'm really glad to be here. This is great. And he just kind of looks around and he does this big like, just like sniffs, and he completely ignores me. Says nothing. Doesn't turn around. Nothing. And I was just like, first of all, like my ears got all warm, and I was like, oh my god, he just completely fucking ignored me. And then I was just so bummed. I was like, oh my god, he fucking totally ignored me. Like, I'm a fucking piece of shit. I just kissed his ass, and he was like, fuck you. Like, three quarters of the fucks in my life are from David Mamet, from being a Mamet fan. He got me talking like that since I saw Hoffa in 7th grade, one of my favorite movies of all fucking time ever, Hoffa with Nicholson. Work, you know what that is? So I'm just so, I don't know, he gets up, walks away, and I'm just like, I'm just devastated in my, I wanted to melt into the fucking chair. I'm like, god damn, I just fucking totally made an asshole out of myself. And fuck him, like what a cunt. He couldn't say fucking hi. I just fucking told him how much I liked the motherfucker. Fucking Jew bastard, right? So I'm just like fucking, I was so bummed. I think there's like, I don't know, maybe it was the second or third last day I was on it. So the girl that got me on the shoot was this, she was such a, this woman was a fucking angel. What was her name? I don't even know if she still works, but Elswit loved her and took her on every job, and she was so goddamn nice, and she just loved me. I worked with her on MI3, and I stayed friends with her, and I used to see her because I was working at Panavision. In fact, I took a week, I used cash in my sick time for a year at Panavision to go work on this, and my boss is like, she was a fucking sweetheart too, and she's like, if you want to, she's like, I'll tell you what, if you want to cash in all your, no, this lady took me into the office. Because she's like, I really want you to come camera PA. Because they were prepping for Red Belt. And I'm like, oh my god, I can't believe Robert Elswit and fucking David Mamet. You're so lucky. What was it? Larissa Suplett, that was her name. I don't know if she's still in AC. I don't know if she's... She was trying to get out of it because she wanted to be a director. So I don't know if she... I haven't talked to her in years. And I should look her up. But she, I don't know, she just liked, she loved that I was such a film nerd and I was so excited. And she's like, well, do you want to work on it? I'm like, well, of course, but I work here fucking every day. I can't. She's like, all right, let me see what I can do. She's like, well, I'm friends with your boss, Darlene. So let's go in. So she takes me to Darlene's office. She's like, I really want to take Luke on this movie. Is there anything we can do? Because he really wants to work on it. And I'm just like, holy fuck. And she's like, well, if he, I used to be able to do so. I used to be able to do my old lady boss so good that I used to be able to call. I think I talked about this. I used to be able to call around the building and do her into the phone. And no one would know if it was me or not. She was like, well, how much sick and vacation time do you have? And I was like, I don't know. So she looked it up. She's like, well, if you want to cash in all your days, you can do it. And I was like, oh, my fucking God. So this lady, she got me on it. So at the end, I remember one time we were all standing around because I would just ask her. I'm like, when you worked on, like, she worked on tons of Elswit movies. And I would ask her all this fucking stuff. So at one time we were standing around and she's like, Robert. She's like, have you met Luke? And she was like, yeah, I think I saw him. What's your name, Ted? And I was like, no, it's Luke. So I started talking to him. Remember I'll put my picture of me and old Elswood up too, because I had my Empire Strikes Back shirt on. And she's like, Luke, it's such a huge, he knows everything you ever did, Robert. He knows all your movies and he's a big fan. And I was like, shut the fuck up. Like, she was like embarrassing me. I was like, don't fucking tell him that. But you know, he was like, she was being sweet. And he's like, oh, that's great, cool. I was like, well, welcome aboard. And he was like, and he looks at my shirt. He goes, hey, I worked on that movie. And I go, no, you didn't. You worked on Return of the Jedi. And he was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I did. Yeah. I knew his whole fucking career. And he's like, yeah, you know what I did on Return of the Jedi? He's like, it was me and Garrett Brown, this is a great story. The guy that invented the Steadicam, Garrett Brown, in the 70s, to get the shots of the speeder bikes in Return of the Jedi, they went into the fucking woods and they'd run through the woods with the camera at 120 frames per second. And then they would just, you know, send in the footage. And then when you see the things of the, when you see the footage of the subjective shots of the fucking speeder bikes in Return of the Jedi, it's just Garrett Brown running through the forest with his fucking Steadicam with Elswit pulling focus for him. And Elswit's like fucking 20 years old or something. He's a kid. And he's like, all we did was run through a forest all day. We didn't know what the fuck was going on. And he's like, and Garrett was going through a divorce or something like that. He was like, had some trouble. And he was just drunk. And then he would make me drink. So it's just me and I'm trying to pull focus and just me and Garrett Brown wasted running through the fucking Northern California forest. That was Return of the Jedi. I was just like, I'm just jerking off. I'm like, fucking keep going. I was like, losing my fucking mind, you know? So I met him. So then like at the end, I think I might have told her about the David Mamet thing. And she's like, everyone just like loved this woman. She was like such a sweetheart. Everyone fucking, she was like, you know, she was like a super pro, but she was like great too. She had like the whole package. Like she was good at it. And she had a personality. I mean, I can't get the personality. She's like, David would never do this. You know, I met Mamet once. The first time I ever saw him, he came to UCLA to do a, he just did a new fucking play. And it was like that part in Capote where Capote reads In Cold Blood. In Cold Blood by Truman Capote. And just that little laugh. Fucking love that movie. So Mamet comes to read like a whole part of his play in front of everybody, like a live reading thing where he does all the voices. And when he talks, he sounds exactly like fucking Pacino in Glengarry Glen Ross. He sounds just like fucking Rickard Roma. It's hilarious. And the character, I guess, talk like him. But he was signing autographs after, and I think I had my copy of... Oh, no, I had my copy of Heist, my other favorite movie he's ever done besides Hoffa. And he signed it, and I was like... He's sitting down. I was like the first person in line after to just, you could just sign shit. And I go, I hate to bug him, man, but can I get a picture? And he's like, you know, I'd really rather not. And I was like, all right, yeah, that's cool. But, and there was a hot chick, like two girls in line behind me where there's a fucking hot chick. And he goes, but I would take one with her. And he fucking points to her. I was just like, yeah, that makes sense. He's like, you know, he's like, here, I'll sign. He's like, he signed my copy of Heist, right? So, no, it wasn't a dick, but just seemed like he had the potential to maybe be a prickly customer. So I flash forward years later, a couple years later here, and we're on set. And then she's like, David would never do that. I'm like, oh, he kind of did. She's like, he goes in a thing where he just ignores people. She's like, he's not, like, he probably didn't even fucking hear you. Because like half the time if we have a question, we have to ask him like three times before he hears us. And I was like, really? So she goes, let's go. She takes me over to meet him. And she's like, I swear to God, I don't know if he was by himself. I don't know what he was doing, but she's like, David. He's like, what? And I was like, oh, she's right. He wasn't kidding. So I think he either was just completely tuned out or just legit didn't hear me. Like, he can't hear for shit or something. And she's like, oh, this is Luke. He's our camera PA, and he's a huge fan, and he studied you, and he's like, oh, how you doing? He shook my hand and everything, and I was like, thanks for making Hoffman. That is one of my favorite movies of all time, and that was a very influential movie for me early on, and that really fucking made a big difference. He's like, oh, thank you very much. He goes, you know, that's one of my favorite movies. It's the only movie I ever was involved with that I didn't get fired off of. So, yeah, I shook my hand, and I think moving back, I think he didn't hear me. But that was Tales from Douche Lane. Do you guys like that one? Trust me, there's more where that came from. I'll save them for later, slower episodes. Oh, you know, I got... This is going to be all over, but this is going to be a fucking nutty episode. It was just a lot of shit. Just a lot of weird little tidbits and whatnot. We got a tablet at work. My coworker needed a new phone. So him and British Martin went to AT&T, and I don't know how shit like this works, but somehow it made it cheaper for everyone if we all got free tablets. I'm like, what? Okay, so I got a tablet. And he's like, here, dude, it's a tablet. And I was like, I don't understand the point of a tablet. I get it if you're using it to like, if you get a fucking like a movie rig on a movie set, you can hold the thing and control it with the tablet, something like that, or a drone, fucking thing. I have a phone and I have a laptop. What the fuck do I need a tablet for? The thing's just completely used. I'm like, why was this even really invented? And they're all like psyched, like, yeah, you can watch stuff on it, blah blah blah. I'm like, yeah, all this exact same stuff I can do with my phone. It fits right in my pocket and anywhere else. Not this tablet the size of a goddamn dinner plate. So I'm selling it on eBay. Anybody want a brand new tablet, AT&T tablet, $100? If you want it, I'll fucking mail it out to you. Why do we need a tablet? That's my opener. I miss going on dates and having reports to talk about, and just slower. Like I don't know if it's the booze or just my getting older, what, but just slow. More and more, I have. It's been less about chicks and more about getting work done and doing shit and just like throwing myself into my fucking crap that no one likes. But I've somewhat eschewed women, or at least the desire for new acquisitions. I'm not particularly concerned about it. But I started talking to this chick and Plenty of Fish is just a fucking, like, I had a whole bit about it, about how the heyday of online dating was 2009 to 2013, around there, for guys. Unless you're like a dude that has like the required, like the Brad Pitt and Fury hair with a beard and covered in fucking tattoos and have like a cute pit bull dog, you're about fucked. There's just no, I mean, it's all the chicks, all that's left are fatties and single moms. The chicks are a fucking mess, and they all seem fucking crazy. Now, you know, ladies, if you're listening, I'm sure the guys are no fucking picnic on there either, but I'm just saying, from a young G's perspective. So I start talking to this chick, and she looked fucking pretty. There's only like three pictures of her, but she looked like vaguely Mediterranean. I'm like, oh, this chick's fucking pretty. So I start talking to her, and she's pretty cool. And we're already making plans to hang out that fucking night. And I'm like, we should just hang out tonight, man. And I don't know how I got it out of her, but I'm like, send me a couple pictures. And she's like, well, I'm kind of curvy, LOL. I'm like, well, I like curvy. And this is, I had another bit about how the word curvy, like Joan from Mad Men is curvy. Big ass, big tits, big hips is fucking curvy. Like, fat is not curvy. That's not what curvy means. You're one big curve. You're letter C. You're fat. Stop saying fucking curvy. So, okay, send me your curvy pic. And this chick is like a fucking, she's shaped like a fucking beach ball. I'm like, you are a fat fuck. You're not curvy. I didn't tell her this, but I'm just like, God damn it. I was so close. I almost went out with her that night. I was so close. We were like making plans to hang out. And suddenly my plans couldn't come too. Now, I know people get, oh, you sound fucking mean. Well, Give me some honest pictures. Show, have a fucking full size picture where I can see you from the feet up. Don't be fucking deceptive and fucking lying. Show up and be fucking. Every fucking chick has in. Don't, if you show up and you're not look like your pictures, I'm leaving. LOL. Like they all have that in their fucking profile headline. But they can show up fucking 40 pounds overweight. If we say anything, we're the shitheads. It's fucking lies and catfishing us. So I'm just like, God fucking, God damn, I deleted it. I'm just like, goodbye, it's fucking Plenty of Fish, fuck it. And Tinder's next, I've had it with the fucking Tinder. You match with the chicks and they fucking, the minute I say hello, they unmatch immediately. I'm like, what, were you in a fucking drunken haze when we matched and then what, now you're fucking sober and you don't like my picture? What the fuck? I can't get anything going off. A couple fucking really hot chicks that I met too. I'm just like, fuck, dude. But, that sucked. I'm just, the curve, I don't understand, I don't get how that term curvy got absconded with and just fucking ruined. It's just like, what does curvy mean? Whatever. your boys had a fucking rough couple. Now, a few episodes ago, I was fucking riding high on top of the world, tearing up the mics, doing pretty good, having a good time. And then, you know, I kind of ran out of that material and I wanted to write some more. And, oh, it's been a roughie. It's been a rough fucking ride. I've probably written 10 minutes of shit. I mean, like 2-3 fucking pages of paper. And none of it is working. Not a fucking keeper in the bunch. It's been a fucking rough road. Last Thursday, I worked out. I did back and legs. Fucking trained pretty hard, which I'm going to do right as soon as we're done with this fucking podcast, right? Like, you don't even recognize me. I look like fucking turning into the fucking Hulk. I did back and legs. Yeah, this figures into the story, so, you know, bear with me here. And I went to, I'm like, I'm going to do two fucking mics, man. I'm going to go to, I'm going to go to the fourth wall right by my house, and then I'm going to go up to goddamn Flappers after that. I haven't been to Flappers in a while. There's a bunch of new stuff that I wrote. Hang on, there's something in my mouth. Like that outtake in Pakistan. I just ate a bug. Remember the bug flies in his mouth? He's like, do you know Willard? I just ate a bug, and he pulls his fly out of his mouth. That's fucking great. Maybe I can make that the intro. I go to West Side, and I don't know what happened. So now that's a fucking ride. I go, because it's right by my house. So I leave work, and I ate something. I don't know what the fuck happened, but by the time I got to the mic, I was ready to shit my pants. I had like an emergency shit, as my fucking stupid roommate would say. And she's famous for those. I'm like, oh, I gotta take a shit. Oh my God. So like, the fourth wall mic, there's never anybody in there. There's like 2 or 3 of us. The whole fucking shebang is on 45 minutes. You're in, you're out, hello, goodbye, and that's all there is to it. Just another fat fuck walking out making nobody laugh. So I'm like, all right, we're going to get through this. Just fucking get up and do it, because the fucking house is 5 minutes away. It's like 2 blocks away from this joint. And like, I am fucking white knuckling at my seat. I'm like, oh, I got to take a shit, fuck. And, I remember this old episode. I don't know if he said it on ONA or what, but Florentine was talking about how, like, you could be fucking dying, and the minute you step on stage, you don't feel anything. Like, you forget everything. You're just completely in the fucking moment. And he said, like, one time he was so fucking sick, he was, like, ready to pass out. He had the fucking flu or something, or food poisoning. And he was sick off his fucking ass, and he's on stage for, like, an hour. Oh, no, he said all I wanted to do was get on stage, because he was feeling so shitty. He knew if he was on stage for that hour, he'd feel good. And he's like, I did. And he's like, I completely forgot I was sick. It's crazy. But I did. I got up, and I was like, totally. I mean, I'm only, what's fucking 5 or 6 minute set, but I was fine. And then as soon as I got off, I'm like, okay. Oh, I think I had to wait for one more comic. And I was like, God, I'm like grabbing the fucking bottom of my fucking chair. It was fucking brutal. So I fucking get home, and like, I don't know if anyone else gets this. Have you ever had to shit so bad that you sing a song to yourself? Like, you're pulling into your fucking parking structure at your place, and you're like, oh, like I don't want to shit, don't want to shit. Like, you sing like a song to assuage your body, because like, you, I don't know if everybody has this, but like, I can hold it. If I have to take, and this doesn't happen very often. It's like a couple times a year at the most. But if I really got to take a crap, I can hold it and be pretty much fine. If it's an hour drive home and I'm stuck in traffic like that, like, I got no choice. What am I going to do, shit in my seat? So, like, my body will make a deal with me. Like, listen, we'll hold this shit at bay for as long as we possibly can. But the minute you're within a fucking 25-yard radius of a toilet, and we know it, and you can't fool us. And as soon as we know, I'm sorry, but it's the barbarians are going to be back at the gate. And that's exactly what fucking happened. And I'm parking, and I'm just like, holy shit, holy fuck. And I'm like grabbing my shit, and I fucking run in the apartment. I took a crap. It was brutal. It was probably the same experience the audience had after they heard my set. So that happened. And then I went to, oh, this is so fucking bad. I go to Flappers. And, like, I did fine at Fourth Wall. I was totally fine. And Flappers, but you know what? I finally put it together. What's been bothering me about Flappers? Because this place, it has an ebb and a flow. It's always kind of changing. The crowds are always cycling through there, and it definitely attracts a certain element. Most of the weirdos I know of go to Flappers. Of all the crazy, there used to be a good, like, smattering of crazies at just about every mic. But it seems like Flappers gets a real a lot of them. And there, you know, there's the crazies in there. And I noticed but besides the crazies, it seems like the higher end of open micers are there. It's all of a sudden it turned to like people that are a little bit better, that have more experience, that are funnier than most people. And a lot of people do pretty good. So if you don't, it used to be like so bad there that like even if your set was a little bit good, you seem great in comparison to these motherfuckers. But now it's kind of the other way around. Now, if you don't have a great set, like you fucking eat it pretty hard in there. And they're not an easy audience in that place. They're all packed. It's the in the front room there in the bar, not the main fucking stage. But so I was weirdly nervous. I don't know why, but I was more nervous than I usually am. And I don't know. I'm always that's one place I wish I had someone to go with me at that place, because it just puts me so much more at ease. But that's a fucking tough room. So I get up, and I got up. It was a decent slot. I was maybe 10 people within the first 10 names called, so the fucking place was packed. And I get up there, and it was way more lit up than it usually is. I could really see everybody. The lighting was different, and that threw me right away. And God damn it, I've never had this happen before. My left leg starts shaking, like, uncontrollably. Like, I couldn't stand on it. It would just shake like I was having almost like a fucking muscle spasm thing. And I'm like, oh my God, what the fuck? Why is my leg doing this? And the first thing I did is, can they see that? Can they? I can feel it happening, but can they see it? Can they do that? I'm like, can they see my leg doing that? So I don't want to take the fucking chance. So I'm trying to shift all my weight. So this is throwing me so bad. And I'm trying to shift my weight all onto my right foot, and I'm like almost like leaning forward, like I'm singing like fucking I don't know, Eddie Vedder or something. I'm like leaning into the fucking crowd, and I'm like, why the fuck is my leg shaking? Fuck! And so then I just start like panicking, and I'm like forgetting my jokes, and I fucking bombed so bad, it was abysmal, dude. Oh my God, it was so fucking bad. Oh my God. I was like, oh boy, I just fucking stumbled and fumbled through my goddamn set with my shaky leg. And I get off stage and I'm like, what the fuck is this about? Is this a new thing now? Am I going to be shaky leg guy? Is my brain going to rebel on me like in this fashion now and make my fucking nervous leg shake? So now like my whole fucking world is just fucking rattled. I'm like, oh my God, is this going to be like a new problem? Like, I'm not gonna be able to fucking stand. So I'm like freaking out. I did terribly, and I'm freaking out. So two mics that night, and didn't go home feeling good. I was like, shit, I ate a goddamn shit sandwich. So the next time I did it was so I wrote a whole new set. So okay, so the next day I got my shit together. I'm like, all right, fucking keep writing. None of that worked. This is none of this shit's working. So I write a whole new fucking 5 minutes at work on Friday. So I was gonna do it Friday night, and I didn't. I can't remember why. So the next time I do it, Saturday, and everyone that read this fucking thing said it was hilarious, and it was all. I was tired of doing like fat chick jokes, and I'm like, I gotta write something with more broad appeal and less mean, because that's where my brain always wanders into that, into just nasty making, and it just doesn't fly out here. I don't know. So I write this fucking set, and everyone I showed it to said it was funny, and I'm like, this is gonna, and I was so sure this is gonna crush. I'm like, this is gonna do fucking good. Like, I can, it was well, you know, I thought I did a good job writing it. It just seemed like funny shit. I get up and fucking just eat shit again. I didn't, so I'm terrified of the shaky leg. Shaky leg didn't come, and I think shaky leg was just because I had worked out and done legs right before. In fact, I might be doing that again tonight if I can get to the goddamn thing on time and get up there. And I hope I don't get shaky leg again. But I didn't have shaky leg, but none of it worked. I'm like, fuck, nothing. None of this worked. None of this landed. Not any of it. I was in, like, West Side's a pretty even keeled place. Like, it's a good place to test shit out, especially if you got a lot of people in the room, because you usually get a good mix of like real people. That's when I saw an ad in the local paper. Didn't go well, and I'm like, oh, fucking Jesus, okay, guess I gotta throw this one out too and keep writing. So I had to go home and write. I had tons of like, Luke, how do you spit out all this material? I mean, maybe it's a quantity over quality kind of thing. Well, I've been piling up just kind of like thought starters for jokes for like a month, and I had a shitload in my fucking notes on my phone, give me notes, and So I'm just, everything that's in there, I'm grabbing, trying to stretch into like a fucking bit, and just nothing, over and over again, nothing's working. So Sunday I went to, this shit I read, I'm like, I don't know how this could not be funny. Like, there's some stuff you wrote, like, now once I got all my best, what I thought were my best bits down and didn't get jack shit, now I'm kind of like clawing at the bottom. And some of this shit, like, I even have like a tag, like one of my jokes is just not great. And at the end, I'm just like, listen, guys, what do you want from me? I got to get up here with something, don't I? Fucking give me a break. Like, this kind of thing at the end. Hopefully that gets a sympathy fucking laugh. Like, that's how desperate I'm getting right now. And I'm just like, man, I just have too weird of a sense of fucking humor. Like, I guess I'm not LA funny. I don't know what to do. Like, fundamentally, I don't know if I'm stand-up funny. I'm just having a complete, like, fucking artistic crisis. I'm like, what the fuck? But then I just still have this weird compulsion to keep doing it. Anyways, I'm like, I'm not gonna quit. I can't. I'm too fucking far in. I'm not doing it. And I like the challenge of it, but it's just like, it ain't fun if nothing works. If you're just, it's swing and a miss every fucking time, just gets fucking exhausting. I went to Westside last night and I wrote another set, and I was like, it was mostly shit. This is like the third or fourth fucking set I wrote in like 1 week, honestly. Another like 4 minute set, just fucking banging them out, but they're just getting me nothing. And I didn't care. I was so wound up. I was just in a mood, and I was hanging out with fucking Tim Spencer and a couple of guys, and I was all just relaxed, and I was like, I don't give a shit how bad this does. Like, I was so ready to bomb. I just didn't care. But that was last night. I didn't get picked, and then I tried to drive to the fucking Lexington downtown at 11 goddamn o'clock to make it to that fucking, to that mic, hey, dude. And I hit this fucking downtown traffic at like 11. I didn't get home till like 12:15. I was like, oh, come on, Annie. You can't have traffic at 11 o'clock. It was all backed up, so I was fucked. So that sucked. But now Sunday, I write another set on Sunday. I swear to God. I write a whole fuckload bunch more jokes on Sunday. And I go to... Hang on. Am I missing anything? Hang on. I'm jumping around. Okay, I'll come back. Sunday, I go to the Lexington downtown, which is kind of like a shithole dive bar, but I think I've talked about this place before, but it's still got like kind of a heart to it. It's got a stage, an actual stage. Now here's the problem with the stage of this place. It's I don't think it's up to union code, the build. So when you walk around on this thing, the fucking wood creaks like a horror movie. It is so loud, and this place is kind of big and cavernous, so it just fucking echoes everywhere. So if you're not, even if, well, unless you're doing really good and there's lots of laughs, all you hear is, not only are you bombing, you just hear the fucking stage creaking. Ah, it's the worst. It just extra reminds everyone how bad you're doing. Was it the Hyperion Cafe? Hyperion something over there had that too. And it was like, this place was, I never did good at this place. It was like a theater in the round where people sat in like bleachers that like went up like six or seven rows. And you kind of stood in the middle of this room like you were doing a fucking Shakespeare monologue. And they had a stage too, and the fucking stage, that stage was creaky as fuck, man. If you moved that, I was like, and it would just fucking, you know, every time you fucking shifted your body weight, like a whole fucking flock of fucking doves took off and shit out of the fucking ceiling. It was very gothic. I'm just kidding. But no, that was bad too. So I go to that place, and I was so sure. I went and saw Deepwater Horizon, and it made me think of a bunch of jokes. And I'm like, all right, this is the... Now we're going to fucking... You guys are going to fucking get... And, God almighty, was it bad. I fucking ate shit again. I mean, I'm fucking... How much shit can you eat? Just fucking getting the crappy... I'm just like, fuck. I'm like, nothing, none of that worked, huh? Nothing, goddamn. And there's a good chunk. I mean, for Sunday afternoon, it was like 5 o'clock. And there's like fucking, you know, 15, 20 people in there and just... Oh, nothing again. Nothing. I'm telling you, it's fucking tough. It don't get no tougher than stand up. It really don't. I don't know anything else that's as unforgiving or instant information. Like, you know right away that didn't work, and it hurts. Fuck. But Sunday I woke up and I saw Deepwater Horizon. This is the story of the big BP oil spill from 2010. This is the whole story of that fucking thing exploding. True story. I walk into the fucking theater. It is playing next to Sully. Another true story. And then in the fucking trailers for Deepwater Horizon is Patriot Day, where Mark Wahlberg plays a police officer during the Boston fucking marathon bombing. I'm like, Jesus. You're like, you guys are sick of fucking superhero movies. How about the... Dude, every fucking story that's been on the 5 o'clock news is a goddamn 2-hour fucking movie committed to it with Mark Wahlberg or fucking Tom Hanks in the lead part. I'm like, Jesus, dude. And he already played the guy from Lone Survivor. I'm like, God, I almost hope there's a fucking earthquake so I get stuck in it. Because if I survive the wreckage, there's a fucking a decent shot Mark Wahlberg going to play me in a movie and I get some fucking money for it. But, and it's just like, at what point is this exploits? I'm telling you, this fucking Patriot Day's fucking thing, marathon movie, I'm just like, this just really just feels like exploitative now. I mean, this is ridiculous. Like, does this really need a, what happened? They caught the guy and it was over. Did we really need a fucking movie? At least Deepwater Horizon, there's explosions and shit going on. That's why everybody compared it to an old Irwin Allen disaster movie from the 70s, but like better done. That's, I could agree with that. But at least there's shit going on. I mean, really, the marathon bomb, when a bomb went off and a bunch of people got fucking hurt and a couple killed. We need a fucking movie about that? What the fuck, man? And then at one point, these guys start watching this shit, the terrorists, and being like, oh, they make a movie about it, and they get all fucking psyched and want to do it. I mean, what the fuck are we doing here? I need a drink. Fucking drink of water. I want to fucking hear you talk anyway, you fucking cunt. Deepwater Horizon, first movie in weeks, Tom Weeks, that I was ready to see because there's been nothing but shit. Just like this week, there's not a goddamn thing coming out that looks even remotely interesting. All everyone's getting shit reviews, or nothing's even over an 80% on Rotten Tomatoes, and if it is, it looks boring. But, yeah, I go to see it, and I didn't know, I either completely forgot or didn't know that Kurt Russell was in this motherfucker. And just like 15 minutes in, I'm like, Kurt Russell! Yeah! I was so fucking happy. And then John Malkovich showed up. I'm like, fucking John Malkovich! Sweet! That's my, I love when it happens. That's my fucking favorite. It's like Kurt Russell showing up in your movie unexpectedly is like getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning to take a piss and there's a strip in your shower. You're like, fuck yes. Like most movies I go to see, I'm like, God, you know what made this movie more fucking awesome? Kurt Russell. And then he shows up. And and he was getting stuff done, Kurt Russell, too. You know, like, he's just bossing people around. He's, like, coming on the ship with his mustache or on the fucking the oil platform. He's like, why ain't this on? Why ain't that on? Come on, guys. Turn those goddamn belts. Just telling, you know, telling it like it is. Like, all the corporate guys are trying to cut corners. And Kurt Russell's like, you're not going to cut corners on my break. Like, this guy. I'm like, fuck yeah, Kurt. Fucking tell him. But, you know, it is what it is. It was, it tells a story, and a bunch of people died, and some people lived, and it was shitty. And then a bunch of oil leaked into the ocean. But you know, it was a harrowing watch. I'll say it took too long to get to the fucking action. I don't think the thing starts. I mean, what was a 100-minute movie, and the thing starts blowing up on page like 60 or 40 or something. I'm just like, fucking hey, can we get to the goddamn fire already? I get the character building, and there was so much just like technical. It's one of those, what else have I compared this to? It's the, we want to let you know we did our homework thing. Like, the screenwriter wants every fucking bit of research he did in that motherfucker. Like, every technical term and thing that they could show to be like, this is a realistic portrayal. We know all these industry terms and every one of these technical details. It just went on and on. Like, all right, already, fucking blow something up. But, I feel like I'm missing a thought on this. But I just ended. It's just one of those things where it's like, I think what did Bob's call a roller coaster ride? What's that movie he was talking about? Where it was? Like he said about Gravity. It's like it's a roller coaster ride. You know, it's nothing really. You're not really left with anything. It's an hour and a half of crazy shit, and it's over. And I'm like, yeah. And that's kind of what this was. Didn't particularly leave anything, but it was. I liked it. It was good. Pretty good. I would definitely see it in the theater. It was in the morning. I saw it like first fucking screening, like 10:20 a.m. And I had a big-ass fucking coffee. And fucking, I should not have had the coffee. I was like white-knuckling it. I was like, just fuck, Jesus Christ. I was like so wound up. And then the goddamn shaky cam in this thing. It was just, they're standing, I mean, before any explosions happen. It's just Kurt Russell and John Malkovich yelling, you know, fucking chewing it up in an office. And the fucking frame is just bobbing all over the place. I'm like, what? Anyone bring a fucking tripod on this set? Can we plant the fucking camera steady for the dialogue fucking scenes? Is this necessary? And by the end of the thing, I usually don't, but man, I was feeling that shaky cam. I was fucking getting nauseous. I'm like, fuck, let's wrap this fucker up already. I can't take much more. I'm going to fucking toss my cookies. Saturday night after that mic, I was supposed to go to I drove all the way to fucking, Scott's going to kill me, but I was just in, I think just two or three days in a row of just eating shit. I don't know. I think it kind of caught up to me. I was kind of in a downer, in a weird mood. And I was also beating myself up for not Ubering, because all of a sudden Uber, I don't know if they're losing drivers or customers, but like now they have all these crazy incentives where it's kind of worth driving again. They have these like guaranteed surges now pretty much all day, like 1.5 times. Like it's getting to the point where if you don't do it now, you're kind of stupid, because the fucking money's there now. That's why I stopped, because I'm like, this ain't fucking worth it. And all suddenly they're making it worth it again. So if you're not doing it, and I'm beating the shit out of my, I should be fucking Ubering and I don't want to. And I drive all the fucking way to Scott's Northridge, and I just hear all these, like, I don't know, he rolls with these, like, family crews now, where they're just, like, kind of upwardly mobile white people that wear golf shirts and shit. And, like, they're not, they're harder for me to, I can't relate to them as much, because I'm not, like, a family guy. And if I'm not drinking, it's just, it's kind of, sometimes if I'm not in the mood, it's, like, a chore to hang out with these people. And I just hear this yard full of all these just people, and then I hear, like, a couple of kids. And I just got right back in my car and just left. I was like, I don't fucking, this is fucking not in the mood. I thought it was going to be just him and fucking Tom and whatever, and it wasn't. I just bailed like a weirdo. But I went home and watched Sicario again. I haven't seen it since fucking last year. God, that fucking movie's so, it's so good and so weird. There's so much weird stuff in it. That one fucking shot where she gets into it with Josh Brolin, it's kind of like a key, it's a pretty key scene in the movie where she confronts him like, why am I on your team, like what are you getting me into, blah blah blah. And it's so un-Hollywood. He films the shot, I mean, I can't remember another movie where someone did something odd like this. He films the whole thing in this super wide where they're like 20 yards away, and it's all one, it never cuts, it's one big wide scene with no coverage or nothing, and it's like 2 pages of dialogue, and they just yell at each other and shit, and then it cuts to the inside of the building, and it's so, I love it. It's such a fucking cool, like, indie movie shot that I don't know how it got in there, but fuck, that movie's so good. I love Sicario. It's great. I think I had another note, but now it's dark out and I can't see my goddamn notes, so I won't bore you with any further details, but oh yeah, I forgot last week, just to get the bad taste of Batman v Superman out of my mouth, I watched Captain America 3/Avengers 2.5 again. Fuck it, that movie is so fucking good. I'm like, this is how you start a movie. That opening scene where he fights fucking Crossbones, who that guy's fucking, I'm so bummed he got killed so early, spoiler alert, in the fucking movie, because he was so cool. He was so awesome. Like, those hand-to-hand fight scenes in those movies are, I could watch them all fucking day. I mean, the movie's 3 goddamn hours long, but it's like, they're fighting shit. I just dream of writing a fucking action or fight scene like that. It's like, they're so fucking stylistic and have so many cool, weird little touches. Fucking great, man. That goddamn scene where the German police come to get him and Bucky after they think Bucky blew up that fucking embassy or whatever, and all the cops come, and Captain America's like, the cops are coming for you. But he can't kill the cops, and they just have that whole fight on the stairwell trying to get out of there. Oh, I gotta watch a fucking 20-minute cut of that. I'm like, I love this fucking shit. So great. It's almost like Steven Seagal kind of shit, but I don't know. It's great. That movie's so goddamn funny. And then I don't know how, the first time around, I never realized how, because Paul Rudd's so fucking funny as Ant-Man. But I don't know, a couple of random lines that Anthony Mackie? As Falcon? He had a couple of funny lines where he's like, I don't know why it made me laugh, but the part where they kind of have to like surrender to the, like, I don't know, the UN forces or whatever. He gives the one of the soldiers like a, he's walking in with Black Widow and he gives a soldier a box with all of his fucking costume. And he's like, I better not look out the window and see somebody flying around in this thing. I don't know why that made me fucking LOL. And then later on, he's like, they're like, I don't know, the shit starts breaking off. I'm like, we need you guys. Go suit up. And he goes down to get his stuff. And on the list, he's like, receipt for bird costume? He's like, really? Bird costume. I don't know. It's funny. But that whole scene where they fight each other at the airport is fucking hilarious. Everybody has so many fucking funny lines. I love that fucking movie. God damn it. It's so great. I know I re-listened to the Now Playing podcast review of it, and they're like, the fight at the airport, greatest cinematic superhero fight of all time, and they all kind of, no one really agreed on it, a couple of those dudes did yet, but I was just like, I never thought of that. I'm like, I think it is. I think it is. I think that fucking fight where they're all like, they're like friendly. I never got the double entendre of the fucking title, Civil War, because they're being civil to each other and they're in a war because they're friends. I never fucking even got that. But that whole fucking fight was great. And just like, there's so many funny lines. I still, every fucking time where Vision flies through the, when he turns into Giant Man, he's like, something just flew in me. Fucking, he's a fucking great man. But whatever. Shut the fuck up, self. Yeah, that was Saturday. Hang on. Deep water, fucking. No more shaky leg. Getting immune to bombing. Oh yeah, I saw what the Westworld fucking premiere was on. Did you watch Westworld? It's fucking awesome on HBO. I loved it. Yeah, it was cool. Shot on film. I can't wait for the. I don't know what else to say about it. Westworld, fucking old. If you haven't seen it yet, go check it out. Go check it out. Again, a lot of tits. God bless you, HBO. Every fucking show just put tits. Yeah, fucking Anthony Hopkins was. I'm like, Anthony Hopkins, like he hit a certain age and then just he hasn't aged in 20 years. He got kind of old looking and just like froze there. And even Ed Harris doesn't look that much older. I mean, that guy's like kind of old as shit, and he got a little older looking, but still. The guy's hanging in there. I mean, he's looked about the same for fucking 20 years. God, is he a fucking badass in that. Hang on, I'm trying to read all this fucking shit, but it's dark, and I'm in fucking traffic. I'm driving to fucking... what street am I on here? La Cienega? Hang on. Okay, yeah, here's some more shit. My 20-year high school reunion is coming up. I can't... Fucking come on, Annie. I can't be that old. I can't fucking believe I'm that old. 20 fucking years. God. So I got an invite for it for next year. And they're having it at the goddamn ballpark downtown in Buffalo. And I'm just like, what do they have? Like a shitload get together at once? And they all, I don't know how this works. Rusty, if you know, fucking let me know if you're listening. But why don't they have it at the fucking high school? Aren't we supposed to? I want to go back to the fucking school. It'd be awesome. I don't know if I'm going to go. I wouldn't fly home for it. And maybe if I can, like, plan my summer trip back and go, you know, I'm not going to make no great effort, but if it happens, it happens. But I heard that they're going to fucking dissolve the fucking town that I grew up in, and it's going to get absorbed into, like, another bigger township close by. And I'm like, how, what? What, are you just going to, like, erase my past? How the fuck does that work? What, are you kidding me? Like, wouldn't that cost so much more money to, like, deactivate a town than it's worth doing? I mean, you have to, just the paperwork and the fucking, you got to change the fucking school and like, what the, I hope that doesn't happen. Apparently there's like a petition going or something. It's like going through like legislative channels to happen. And I'm like, I want to go back there and fight like fucking William Wallace. Like, you can't take my little fucking shitty suburb full of fucking, basically like working class and white trash motherfuckers. I hope that would really fucking, that'd suck. That fucking happen. I hope not. But, yeah, that's kind of a non-story, but whatever. Don't get as old as me, because it sucks. I didn't even want to talk about this. No, I'm not going to say it. It sounds too self-aggrandizing. I reread my fucking... I haven't read it. I finished that Tom A. Hawk script, and I didn't think a lot. It was just kind of fucking around writing it, but I went back... I guess I will go into it. I went back and read it, and I was like... I haven't read it in months, and I just... I realized I didn't do, like, a final sweep on it for, like, grammatical errors or anything like that. I'm like, this script's pretty fucking good, man. It's funny. It's like, yeah, I know. Sorry. Listen, I just told you how much I sucked for fucking 40 minutes. Can I give myself a fucking pat on the back for something? Like, I was reading it. I'm like, I can't believe I wrote this dialogue, because it's all like Texas, like shit kicker people. But like, I don't know. It's, to me, if I was an actor, these all seem like super fun parts, because they're all like really colorful people and characters and shit. And it's very like Tarantino-ish, but, I don't know. I read it. And I was like, God, this is. I really want to like try and get this made. Like re up my. I kind of stuck my toe in the water, as I said several episodes ago. But I thought I was just gonna kind of let it go and be like, well, I'll just save it around as a writing sample for if I try to get work down the road. And someone's like, yeah, we're writing these features. And I'm like, well, yeah, here's one. But like, I don't know. I love it. I really want to see this fucking thing get made. I love it. I love all these characters, and I think it'd be a fucking fun movie. Whatever. Sorry. I'm looking into, so I signed up for this thing online where it sends you like it's almost like an aggregate site that sends you every day a bunch of different film festivals all over the fucking world. And some of them are free. So all the ones that are, most of them are 20, 30, 50 bucks. And we never get into fucking any of that. Phil, it's such a racket. Phil and Wessels are fucking just such bullshit. But any of the free ones, I'll try. And I've been sending the Tom Arnold skit to lots of them. None of them accepted. None of them. Probably because they're not politically correct enough. And there's boobs in it, and that's offensive. Probably the reason. I wouldn't be surprised. But so I'm looking through, and they sent me one for LA Film Festival. And I go to look at the specs of how to submit, because I'm this one that's in pre-production right now, in post, that one I shot with Kevin Pollak and everybody. I'm like, oh, it'd be great to get this in. I would actually pay to submit to that at LA Film Festival. And I start to look into the submission guidelines, and there's a questionnaire of, it starts out with like, who, you know, what kind of cameras did you shoot on? Was it shot in LA? And then it starts asking the ethnicity of the cast and crew. And then it's like, number of colored people. And I'm like, what in the fuck is this? How is this relevant to the goddamn artistic process of filmmaking? What the fuck does anyone's ethnicity have to do with registering your fucking film for a film festival? I was fucking furious. I'm like, you motherfuckers. So I start fucking tweeting. I'm all over, I'm fucking Reddit. I'm like, this is, of course, everybody on fucking Reddit is like, sorry, white guy. Oh, sorry, you guys dominated everything for 100 years. Jeez. God, wow, that was almost an accident. God bless the fuck. Did you get some minorities in there? Yeah, I really feel sorry for you. Fucking die in a fire. Fucking kill yourself. It's fucking discrimination. It's still discrimination. What is it, okay because it's against white people? So you're telling me if I don't meet your specs for number of women, number of different ethnicities, number of gay people, number of colored people, which was one of the fucking categories. I'll put a picture of this up on my fucking Flickr. You can see it. If I don't meet your specs, what, my film doesn't get fucking accepted because there's too many fucking white people in it? Are you fucking kidding me? I got so mad, I emailed the fucking ACLU, and I was like, look at this. This is fucking discrimination. You can't do this. It doesn't matter who it's against. It's fucking wrong. This has nothing to do with submitting your motherfucking film. So, I'll probably hear nothing about it, but I was pissed. I tweeted the fuck out. I emailed them. I'm like, yeah, can you guys let me know what anyone's ethnicity has to do with submitting a film, and how can you prove that it doesn't affect the fucking submission process? If we don't meet your fucking forced diversities, your forced fucking diversity specs, how embarrassing, how offensive, like how fucking dare you, ethnicity, what fucking business of yours, what the ethnicity was of anyone involved, why would you even fucking ask that, motherfucker? Oh, so fucking pissed, fuck that shit. Sorry, I had to get that out. But it's a legitimate gripe, right? I mean, you know, it's no one's business, no matter any way you fucking cut it. Just get these fucking papers on here. Let me go get the papers. I don't know if I want to talk. Here's more wham-wham, woe is me shit. My old boss gets a hold of me the other day. So that whole Jamie Foxx thing was going on. And now they're getting ready to prep the camera package. They're going through us. Half the gear is ours. I think half is his, whatever. And he sends me this text, and he goes, you know, fucking A. I don't know if I should get into this. You know what? I'm not. Just to be safe, fuck it. I'm sorry. I'm not. I'm gonna leave this one off. I don't think it's. It might come back to bite me in the ass. It's a legit gripe, and it's really fucking sticking to my craw. It's annoying me, but maybe I'll shut up about it. Okay, I'll end on this. There was a guy we worked with, and his name was AJ. He was in one of our sketches, okay? FunnyOrDie.com/weirdfellas. Or weirdfellas.net. You can even go, you know, oh, weirdfellas.net. We got our own website. If you want, you can just go straight there. Like I said last time, weirdfellas.com was taken from a guy that tried to, quote-unquote, help us and get me a website, but ended up fucking me in the ass like, you know, most things do when people try to, quote-unquote, help. But hang on, I need a drink. Hang on.
We're almost there. Just let me have a fucking drink, will ya? Oh, yeah.
And this guy's name was AJ. Now, this is the first time we were ever supposed to get... it was Life is Terrible. It's a sketch. One of my favorite ones ever. It's the most Woody Allen thing I ever did. I'm actually in it. It's me and Bokes on a beach, and we're talking about like high school memories, and it goes into this whole thing. And we were supposed to have Eric Roberts was supposed to play the this dude that was like a jock in my high school appears in it, and then this guy was supposed to be the jock's dad. It was supposed to be Eric Roberts, and he was gonna do it, and then he got booked on something, and couldn't do it. Oh, he got booked on the show Suits on USA. And he's like, I got booked on a show, I can't do it, but he's like, I really like this, and I think you guys are great, and hit me up in the future. And we did, and we put him in Powder Donuts, which was a much less good skit. But Life is Terrible is fucking great. It's black and white. I love it. It's one of my favorite ones we ever did. It's pretty cool. I mean, it's not like funny. It's more this kind of weird, quirky concept. It's like a Louis episode kind of thing. And so we get this dude AJ. I put an ad on Craigslist. He's an older guy, probably around 50. And like this guy. Now, he's a nice guy. He's a nice guy. He's a nice guy. But this dude was such a bullshit artist. I mean, the guy was such a fucking liar. An exaggerator. We're just like, what the fuck? Are you kidding? And now, he did a good job. He's pretty good in it. He did a pretty good job as the guy. I mean, it wasn't a huge part or anything. It was just a few lines and shit. But, like, he pulled it off. We thought he did good. And, like, I don't know how, but, like, every once in a while, I'll just think of him, and I'll go in this like rabbit hole of his social media feeds. This is a fucking older guy. I mean, this guy's like 50, and he's like kind of a big dude. And like, I'll go on his Facebook and his fucking Instagram and shit. It's mostly the same stuff across all of his platforms. I don't want to tell you his name because I'm afraid someone's gonna go on it and fucking look him up and fuck with him. I don't want to be like, you know, I'm blowing off steam about him now, but I don't wish any ill will upon, you know, I don't fucking hate the guy or anything. It's just, it's more of an amusing thing. But I'll go through his history, and this guy is such a fucking liar, and such a, like, he wants to be fucking famous so bad. And like any project he does, and it's like, if he's from Kansas or something and people see this, that he could probably fool them, but like, if you've been on one set in your whole life, you could just see how full of shit this dude is. Be like, new TV show, working on TV show. It's like really bad. All of his pictures are great. They're all blurry and terrible. Like, he's such a bad photographer. Like, it's just like, nothing will even be in focus and shit. They're terrible. And they'll be like, on new TV show coming out next year called like Unplugged or something. And like, you can see the crew, and it's like a 5D and like one fucking area light. It's like a no budget production. Like, you could fit the entire camera package in your fucking front seat of your car, and like new TV show. They keep saying it's a TV show. It's like, no, this might be a webisode, sir. It's not a television show. And then he got this gig where he he played Leatherface for like a still photo shoot for like posters and shit like that, for like promotional. I think it's like probably the biggest gig he ever got. But like, I mean. It's for billboards and shit. And so he tells everybody he played Leatherface. Yeah, you see the Texas Chainsaw movie? That was me. I played Leatherface. It's like, no, you didn't. You. They took pictures of you as him for the fucking ads. So then he's got all these really bad, like, again, they're all out of focus and shit. They're all blurry. And he's like, me playing Leatherface in Texas Chainsaw 3D. It's like, no, you didn't. You were not Leatherface in Texas Chainsaw 3. The guy who played him was Latimer from the program, who used to always see you up at the fucking... We used to always see up at the Rainbow Room. Andrew, that dude. That guy that was in all those movies in the 90s. Remember, he was Butterfingers and Hudson Hawk. Yo, Mr. Hawk, I got your stamps. Good, Yogi. That guy. He was Leatherface, you dumb fuck. It's just nonstop lies. So then he goes through this whole... So he started this fan... I'll tell you his name. It's AJ Stone. Stoan, all right? Don't be fucking mean to him, because, like, he's not a bad guy. He's just one of these dudes. He's just one of these LA dudes that wants to be famous so bad and doesn't really have any particular, like, discernible talent that he's going to get. He's a hyphenate. Okay, this guy's a singer, songwriter, producer, actor, director. He want, like, all this stuff, but like he's a what do they call it? He's a jack of all trades but a master of none. One of these dudes. I know there's a bunch of guys like this. And it just, everything is so exaggerated. It's so full of shit. And I find this fucking Facebook post where he's like, I want to, on his fan page where there's like four fans. There's like he posts every day. You got how bad, like, he tries to be funny, and it is abysmally bad. Like, they don't even make sense. None of his posts. they're so like douchey and something like your dad's buddy who's trying to be funny but isn't one of the like every joke is just like, oh god, like even like worse than mine even. At least mine are like clever on some, they might not be funny, but at least it's clever on some level. His are just like, Jesus Christ, dude. But he's like, I want to make an announcement to all my stoner. He calls them stoner. If you're a fan of his, you're a stoner. I haven't even thought of this dude in a year. I mean, we made that fucking skit, what, 4 years ago? And that's the other thing that pisses me off. All these pictures and all this shit, there's not one mention of ours. Nothing. All these other awful fucking shit projects he was in. He's got this one where he goes, four awful, badly framed, out of focus, shitty looking pictures that he took of him on the set. He's like, me in a Scrabble commercial. And it was, I don't even know if it was a spec. I can't tell if this was supposed to be a spec commercial for Scrabble or if it was supposed to be like a comedy sketch about Scrabble. I can't tell. He just says, me in Scrabble commercial. And it's so obviously not a real Scrabble commercial. It's so bad. It's like horribly shot, terribly edited. And it's like doesn't make any sense. Like it's not funny. If you find this Scrabble commercial, you got to find this fucking thing. I'm just like, I watched it like three times. It's only like 20 seconds long. And I'm just like, what the fuck were they? What were they going here? What the hell was going on in this fucking thing? It's awful. He's got all this, but he does. I'm telling you, our thing that he was in, Life is Terrible, is the best thing this guy has ever done that I've seen of all his other acting work and shit. It's like the only good thing he ever did. It was a good script and it looked cool. It was shot in black and white. It looks like 16 millimeter film. It's really nice looking. And we're on the beach and shit. And there's not one mention of him, not one picture, nothing. I'm like, this motherfucker. Like, what a fucking cunt. But, so he has this, he's like, all my stoners, I want to make a big announcement. He's like, I just got this. It's like fucking 9 paragraphs long. Just this pontificating fucking fool. Probably writing at 3 o'clock in the morning. And he's like, he's like, I got it. I've always, you know me as a singer and a songwriter. And I try to get out there and do shows and sing my songs. He's like, but I just want to announce a big announcement. I'm going to be making an R&B album. And I hooked up with, like, of course, like, legendary manager Steve, just some asshole. Just why one of these 9 billion just leeches out here that just try to fucking, they find dumb new artists and just fucking, you know, take advantage of them. This is some shitty management company. I'd probably run out of the guy's fucking kitchen. And he's like, I'm going to be recording an R&B album of, and this whole long thing about how it's going to be this huge album and it's like a $1 million recording studio and like look for me on tour next year. None of this happened. Nothing, because the post is from like a year and a half or 2 fucking years ago, or maybe longer. There's like no evidence, but he recorded. Oh my god, he recorded this fucking song. It's another level of bad. I can't even. You know what? I can't describe it for you. I'll just play it for you. So please, God. Well, thanks for listening to me rant and rave and all my bullshit. And you know, I'll see you next week, Obs. But listen to this. Please stick fucking through and listen to how me and Bokes are obsessed with the song. Like we text the lyrics to each other. It's fucking horrible. It's so bad. It's so bad. It's good. Long story short, it's like I was like, this is like The Room, the movie The Room of songs, of like R&B fucking songs. He's just like talking through it and trying to be like romantic. Just listen how bad these lyrics are and how obviously like clever he thought they were. It's fucking brutal. But it might put a goddamn smile on your face, guys. You might get a little kick out of it. I know I did. I'm telling you, stick through and enjoy a little AJ Stone. Eternity.
When I think of eternity, I think of you and me and how I want it to be. Walking hand in hand, our feet in the sand. It's us, the you and me clan. Rolling down the interstate, taking it to top speed. Sliding some tunes, mama, kick up your feet. Move close, lean on me, see what I see. Let me tell you about eternity. We're gonna hang 5, then we hang 10. Gonna raise a level of this love again. No demons within, everything's a has-been. Healing our wounds, but we never forget what we've had, what we've lost. All the joys and the battles we've fought, what we've learned, or what we've taught. All it is just wasted thoughts. So the future is what we dream about. A quaint little farm and a cool beach house. Loving you is what I'm talking about. Raising our family in a nice small town. There's all of this and more to come. Smiles, laughter, with loving and fun. Many, many moons with many, many suns. When we cry, the tears are happy ones. Eternity. It's a one-way street. a love journey where our souls will meet. Growing old together is where we all creep. That's why you gotta believe eternity, 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 eternity. I'm telling you that you're my number one. So go ahead, girl, let me get you some. I'll give it all, it's my pleasure. Because I love you, and you're my lifelong treasure. I can't imagine anything without you. The love I have means I never will doubt you for eternity. 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 So until then, here's what I'll do. I'll always treat you good and tell you that I love you. Hold you close and always keep you near. I'll be your rock and always help you face your fears. Never let you go, I will never fail you. I'm the one who will always hail you for eternity. For eternity. It's our fate. I love you, girl. There ain't no mistakes. Just trust in me, day and night. All our wrongs will always be right. Baby, I'll never leave your sight. I'm here for eternity. You got me right. Cause eternity was made for us. Look at our love. It's just so lustrous. One of a kind. Eternity's a must. Real love. Eternity or bust. Eternity. 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 I'll always love you for eternity.